Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Love our listeners. You are hitting us up. Put them up. See Dukes. Mike's out today. Abe Gordon's in. We're going to hear from him in just a minute. I think I just saw him give up a game winner, but we'll discuss in a minute. Mr. Ezekiel Jackson says, Dukes, I don't care who the new president of basketball operations is. I just want to win. I want the Hawks to win. If it's Danny Ferry, so be it. So many of you are commenting, as Zach Klein from WSB put out a report that, per sources, the Hawks are casting a very wide net. Now, I can co-sign that. That is very true. But one name that's familiar to Hawks fans is former general manager Danny Ferry. Ferry is going to interview for the job for the Hawks. And a lot of you are freaking out. And so we're talking about this as Abe sits down here. He just got done with the media game here at the Atlanta United Training Grounds. But they're going to interview, you know, Monty McNair, Calvin Booth, Sharif Abdul-Rahim, Elton Brand. Guys, there's a bunch of names I could tell you right now that are interviewing or potentially will down the road at some point, or some have already, that are going to interview for this job. But I just want to be clear about, you know, what I said there in the first segment, and that is, for those who don't remember, Danny Ferry was basically let go. He resigned after he read aloud a racially sensitive comment from a scouting report during a team meeting in which one of the owners was recording, and it was about Luol Deng, who was a forward in Miami at the time. And so that was the incident that was the wow, gotcha moment. Ultimately, it got Ferry got. But as I said, he's been in and around basketball for the last 10 years, but not in a general manager's position. He's basically been scouting. And so as you look at the potential candidates, and we do not know all of them, I do know of a few high-profile guys that you would be familiar with that are certainly going to be interviewed for this job, but I'm not sure what Tony Ressler and the Hawks are looking for, and that's something hopefully Steve Koonin can tell us coming up a little bit later on today. With that said, hey, man, what is going on? Did I just see you give up a game winner?
It was a penalty shootout, and we did not come out on top. That's all right. I did what I could. I made a couple saves in the shootout. I scored in the shootout.
Congratulations.
And we faltered in sudden death.
So, first of all,
a couple people. Maybe shouldn't have been on that front five list of penalty takers.
Oh, so now we're playing the blame game.
Couple people maybe shouldn't have been number six.
Were you not in the net? Were you not in goal? Could you not control this situation? I just glanced down. By the way, two halves, 20 minutes each, running clock. All member medias, folks in and around the media. It's a fun event. Atlanta United does this every year. So they split the teams up. You guys were what? Team what?
We're Team Connector.
Okay.
Against Team Resurgence.
Okay. And Resurgence won today, guys, as Abe said, in a shootout. But, yeah, I just looked down literally as we went to break, and I saw you in goal, and I was like, oh. And then they showed the replay in here, and they showed it in slow motion, by the way. And I saw you kind of just, you know, like try to move that direction, but, you know, it was just you were a hair late. Shouldn't you be running the field right now after giving up that goal?
I don't think so. I think I performed admirably. I don't think this loss is on me, Carl. You know?
Who are you going to blame it on?
I got a couple names.
I got a couple of people.
You know, our last penalty taker just kind of plopped one right down the middle.
All right.
Said I thought he was going to dive.
But you had a lot of fun, though.
It's always fun, and we appreciate the staff here at Atlanta United for doing this.
Oh, wow, there's Joe Patrick. Did he cut his hair?
He's been – you haven't seen him in a while?
I haven't seen Joe.
Joe's sunscreen 100 SPF right
there. I had no idea. Joe Patrick has cut his hair. Yeah, he used to – well, I say used to, like months, a few months ago last time I saw him.
We also just see him wear a hat all the time.
That's true.
That's the other thing.
Oh, he looks good bald, man. He does. So, good to see all of our friends out here at Atlanta United. What's up, man?
He's shaved.
What are you talking about?
Don't call him bald.
He is bald.
He shaved.
Well, yes, but it's a choice.
That's why it's shaved.
Well,
bald is not a choice.
I don't know. After you said it, now I'm thinking maybe it's been like this after all these years.
Look,
under that
hat.
He
was headed that direction. I think we all agree on that.
Yes. So, anyways, he looks like a totally different dude. Mike Conti's out here. A variety of folks that work with the organization, obviously, and a bunch of media members that you guys would be familiar with as well. So, it's good to see everybody. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're out here at Atlanta United Training Grounds. Guys, we got a lot to get to. B-Mac's going to join us here coming up in less than 10 minutes. A couple of news notes we need to talk about. One, breaking news today outside of the Hawks and the interview process that they're going through to try to find their president of basketball ops. And if you're just joining us, Danny Ferry is going to be interviewed. And if that's a shocker and a surprise to you, I don't think it should be. But I also don't think he's going to get the job. And that's just kind of where I'm at. I feel like the Hawks, if they were to do this, would be betraying the fan base. And for those who were offended, guys, it doesn't – if 10% of the fan base was offended, it's a problem. It doesn't have to be 90%. And so that is what the Hawks are weighing when you start talking about, all right, we're potentially going to try to bring him back if they were. And again, interviewing him says he's a candidate. He's legitimate. But I also think they'd really have to think about how they what would go about this. I'm not telling you he's not getting the job. That's just my general feeling. But to be a candidate says a lot that the Hawks are going to speak and talk to everybody they possibly can. Real quick, Greg Popovich stepping down after 29 years. Now, we know he had medical issues, guys. Pop, and I'll tell you this, 97, when they drafted Tim Duncan, I was in San Antonio. I was working as a media member at the time, and he had taken over that organization. Nobody foresaw what he would do and how that organization would turn. And Greg Popovich is one of the best and greatest coaches in the history of the NBA. But that has happened today. So he's going to step down as coach. He's going to remain with the Spurs, obviously in the front office capacity. But now all of a sudden you go, all right, are the Spurs going to stay the course of what they did last year? They had an interim situation. Or are they going to bring in somebody else? But what's your thoughts here with Pop stepping away? Because we just got to give him his props, man. He's 76 years old, five-time champion, multiple-time coach of the year. Coached, you know, multiple great players, and Ginobili and Parker and, you know, Duncan, David Robinson. We could go on and on. And the thing about Pop is it was not a destination until he got there and changed the culture. And all of a sudden guys wanted to go to San Antonio and play with the guys that he had. It's kind of interesting because you talk about small markets. It was not one of these places where players traditionally wanted to go, but they had great teams while he was in his peak and in his prime.
Well, here's the interesting thing to me. That's got to be the number one job available.
I agree.
As a head coach. I mean, you got Wemby. You got a secondary rookie of the year, Stephon Castle. You got Fox. I mean, that team is loaded.
They're nice.
They're young.
Yep.
They've got money to play with, a good ownership group, and Pop is still going to be involved as team president. The one question I would have is he overshadowing? Do you have as a coach the ability – to get out from his shadow while he's still involved?
That's interesting. I don't know. I don't know if until he's completely away from it that would happen.
But the question is, what does it take, right? Let's go to college real quick.
Okay.
Did John Shire get out of Coach K's shadow this year?
He did.
How?
He did. Because, one, he got the best player in the country to come, which is something that people question because only Coach K was going to be able to do that. And then you make a run to the finals.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Shire, we now know he's not Coach K, but he can coach. And I do think that
– And unlike DeBoer at Alabama, you feel pretty good about Duke going anywhere.
There you go.
And I think that's the thing for whoever the Spurs end up hiring. Just start winning with these young guys. You'll be there. But that's the number one job.
Yeah, I totally agree. But Pop, again, stepping away from coaching, they announced that today. And he missed most of the season after suffering a stroke. That happened in November.
Were you surprised that he stepped down? I mean,
yes.
I never thought he was going to come back to coaching.
No.
I was not surprised.
Well, look, I said this when Tim Duncan retired, because years ago Pop said to me, and this wasn't like a personal thing, he just, you know, we'd always ask him, when are you going to retire? And I'd see him at different games and, you know, and run into him over the years. But I'd be like, when are you going to give this up? You got chips. What are you doing? And he was like, what else am I going to do? And really, that's what these guys all say. What else am I going to do? Then Pop's wife died, okay, a few years back. And he really was like, what else am I going to do? So after going through that, everybody just assumed, all right, he'll do this until he's, you know, not wanting to do it at some point, and then he'll step away. Unfortunately, health comes into play, and now it's almost like he's forced to step away. But, yeah, I didn't think he'd coach again either, Abe, as we talk about Greg Popovich stepping down after 29 years as the coach of the San Antonio Spurs.
I saw a note, Spoelstra is now the longest-tenured head coach.
Isn't that crazy?
However many years ago was it, we would have had this exact same conversation about Pat Riley and Spoelstra and how's his way out from under the shadow. Obviously, he's done that on his own terms. How many more years do you think Spoelstra got left? This year had to be immensely frustrating.
Well, it had to be brutal. I really believe Pat Riley, you know, Mike and I were talking about this. Mike's out today. Abe Gordon is in for Mike. Is it time for Pat Riley to call it quits? He's 80-something. I'm not even sure. I think he's 81, 80-something. But as brilliant as Pat Riley has been, as long as Riley's there, Spoelstra is going to be there. He started under Riley, and people forget he was a film guy, right?
Yeah.
So he has earned the utmost respect around the league, and he's brilliant. I love what Eric Spoelstra has turned into as a head coach, and he's a champion. But I
was wondering at what point he steps off the sideline.
I don't know. It's a great question. Hey, man, we got a lot to get to. Last night, speaking of being brilliant, Jalen Brunson.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Appreciate all of our listeners hitting me up and saying, Dukes, Spurs kept it in-house. They have hired Mitch Johnson. Abe and I were talking about it. And I said to Abe, because I had heard that, but I didn't know if it was finalized. If I'm the Spurs, I might be looking around a little bit. But they do, listen, it's not uncommon. This is how they work. R.C. Buford's been there for years. Him and Pop are the two guys that make all the calls, and so it doesn't surprise me. But, yeah, I had heard that. I just didn't know if it was finalized. So the Spurs have already made that official with Pop stepping down. Mitch Johnson is the guy. All right, guys, let's talk to our man Bryant McFadden. B-Mac, two-time Super Bowl champion with the Pittsburgh Steelers, NFL analyst for CBS Sports. And I want to know, B, Abe's in for Mike today. How did you like what the Falcons did in this draft? And be honest, like, did you like it a little bit or did you like it a whole lot?
What's happening, fellas? First off, I think my initial reaction was I really love the Falcons draft. The fans have been complaining year after year the inability to do what? Sack the quarterback, put pressure on quarterbacks. The Falcons have always been in the bottom of the barrel in that stat defensively, and, of course, they try to improve in terms of the personnel. But this also tells me two things, guys. One thing for sure. Terry Fontenot understands that it's imperative for the Falcons to make the draft. To make the playoffs this year, have a significant push, especially in a watered-down division. So he's like the hell with the future first-round picks. Because I, for one, Carl, Abe, I feel like they gave up too much to move back into the first round to go get James Pierce. But if you're Terry Fontenot, you're like, I can care less about what 2026 draft going to look like. It's all about right now and trying to do everything I could do to improve the personnel so we can get into the playoffs and, most importantly, keep his seat hot. So if you look at it from that logic, yes, they gave up a nice haul to get back into the first round. But if you're Terry Fontenot, you're not thinking about 2026 in the future. You're concerned about now and trying to improve this defense so you can have a significant playoff push.
Well, one thing you look at the future and now is Drake London, and the Falcons pick up his fifth-year option. And I'm a little bit nervous about what is coming in terms of an extension for Drake London. When you look at what he's doing, what he could potentially do with Michael Penix this year, what kind of tier do you think he is? I'm not trying to sit here and argue that he's Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, but he might end up with a top 10, maybe even top 7 contract among receivers.
And see, that's the thing, you know, when you look at the market value, Drake is currently getting ready to get in, go into his fourth year, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, last year was a career year, around 1,200 yards receiving, play outstanding football. So because of what he did last year, you talk about which tier would he be in. Of course, he's in that tier two category, I think, when you look at the potential and seeing what he did last year. I mean, 1,200 yards with 9 touchdowns. That's great production. I think he had 100 receptions, if I'm not mistaken, as well. So if you're the Falcons, that's what you're banking on seeing from Drake London moving forward, and he's going to command a nice haul. I think when you look at what T. Higgins just received from Cincinnati, if you're Drake London, you probably want to be higher than T. Higgins deal. But if you're Atlanta, that's where you look at right now compared to some of the other elite wide receivers in the National Football League. But the issue for Atlanta is the wide receiver position, the inflation at that number has been unbelievable. And that actually helps Drake London's argument in terms of what the market is and what his potential says he's deserving of seeing.
B-Mac, tell me your assessment of these safeties. Actually, one guy's a nickel, Bowman from Oklahoma. The other, you know, Xavier Watts is a safety out of Notre Dame. Tell me your assessment of these guys. We talked a lot leading up to the draft about the corners. I know you love the safety out of South Carolina, but what do you think about the ones we drafted?
Now, Xavier Watts, in terms of value, I think he's the best value pick for the Falcons, guys. Getting him in the third round was definitely a huge plus because Xavier Watts, he was a wide receiver, Carl Abe. He made the transition to DB to safety while at Notre Dame and really jumped into the saddle and made plays instantly. Over the last 2 years, he had 13 interceptions. He's a ball-hawking safety. Being a former wide receiver, the ball skills is there when you look at his playmaking ability. And he's a physical presence in the running game. He loves to tackle. So I really believe the upside is there for him, especially making the transition from wide receiver to DB in the midst of his collegiate career. Now, the Billy Bowman pick, I love Billy Bowman. I really do. And I know we text about this call, but I was a bit surprised because you just used a third rounder on Xavier Watts and you went and got Billy Bowman with the next round pick. So I know you talked about the nickel side of things.
Right.
He was more so a safety than anything. I'm not saying the versatility isn't there for him to basically move in to be a nickel or a dime type corner, but when you watch his tape at Oklahoma and watch his career, he was mostly a post safety or a box safety, very, very impactful. But I don't know if that is why they drafted him to basically say you'll be a nickel corner, especially not seeing him do it throughout his collegiate career. But I guess the Falcons have a plan in place, but also, too, guys, he's another guy. I talked about Xavier Watts having double-digit interceptions in his career. Billy also had double-digit picks while at Oklahoma as well, so he also had the ball skills that you would like to have in the secondary.
It's Brian McFadden on the WadeFord.com hotline. Abe Gordon in for Mike Bell, joined by Carl Dukes on Dukes and Bell. What do you make of a first-round pick Jalen Walker being in the edge rusher's room, not the linebacker room?
I'm a bit concerned with that, me personally, because I feel like he's like a joker in the terms of his position. I would love to see him be in the off-ball room to start off and then kind of fluctuate into the edge rushing room, me personally. Here's why. When you look at Jalen Walker, guys, the first player comp that comes to my mind is Micah Parsons. Remember Micah Parsons coming from Penn State? He was more of an off-ball linebacker, but he became an edge rusher in situational moments. And then, of course, with Dallas, they kind of utilized him in that same mindset. I think Jalen Walker has the same pedigree in terms of the versatility to be the quarterback of the defense as an off-ball guy, but then in situational moments, you can move him as an edge. And that's kind of how they use them at Georgia. So if I'm Atlanta, if it worked for Georgia and if it worked for Jalen and that same positional versatility, I would do the same thing. But like I said, clearly they have a game plan in place, and I'm not saying that it won't work out, but that's just my personal preference, seeing how well he played at Georgia and seeing what Micah has done for the Cowboys.
What'd you make of Shador's situation, bro?
Oh, man. Hey, Carl, I know we spoke last Friday about this, and I know we continue to hear different things coming from what led to the slip. Two things. Number one, I was a former player once, and I got drafted once. When I attended those meetings with different teams, even if I felt like the team didn't have a shot to draft me, I wanted to sell myself to that said team. It's no different, listeners, Carl and Abe, when you go through a normal interview process with a 9-to-5 opportunity, you want to do what? You want to sell yourself to whoever it is interviewing you. And that's the name of the game for the NFL. So clearly what we're hearing, and I'm not saying that what I heard is true and the same can be said for you guys because we were not in the room. But we're hearing so many different things that was attached to Shador not selling himself, not being prepared. You know, one team wanted him to study the playbook the night before. During the interview, he didn't study the playbook, wasn't prepared. Those are things that definitely could make you slide. And you look at some of the Hall of Fame-like players that have come into the draft, that have slid for other issues, it's very, very serious, especially if you play the quarterback position. Now, I'll say this too, guys. Cleveland drafting Shador Sanders didn't make any sense to me personally, because you used a third round on Dillon Gabriel, and you already had four guys at the quarterback spot before you drafted Shador Sanders.
So what are you saying? Are you saying this was an owner pick? Are you saying this was a Haslam pick?
No question. No question, yeah. Carl. Abe, yeah. And you know why I say that? And this is my opinion. When you watch Cleveland's draft room the entire night, every time they showed their room and they made a pick, everyone was elated, everyone was clapping, you saw smiling. But when they made the Shador Sanders pick, when you look at Barry, the GM, when you look at Kevin Stefanski, did you see any animation from any of the faces in that room?
I did not.
You did not? So that's what I'm saying, because if you look at the entire night, day one, day two, and day three, every time they made a pick, they were clapping, they were excited. It was almost like, man, we're not in on all this, but hey, here it is. And it was so obvious. So me personally, I think that was a Haslam pick. And one thing we know about the owner for Cleveland, if he wants to step in and do something, he is going to do it, a la Deshaun Watson in that contract.
Well, I go back to Mr. Wreck This League when he made the decision to pop back in and draft Johnny Manziel. You'd have thought he'd learned he didn't have a great read on quarterbacks back then, but I guess not. One of the questions obviously of interest here to people in Atlanta, but also just in general, is Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers. And what is the timeline here? I mean, how long are they going to wait before he makes his decision, he being Aaron Rodgers, versus just going ahead and taking the next step, which is potentially trading for Kirk Cousins?
You know what? My timeline, if I was a part of the Pittsburgh Steelers organization, my timeline would have been last Sunday, after draft weekend, because now you know exactly what your roster looks like, and you still have money that could be allocated to Aaron Rodgers, but he needs to let me know he's playing with us. So either we can go ahead and get things rolling with him or move on without him. To this point, we haven't heard anything from Aaron Rodgers, but I will continue to reiterate this, guys. I highly doubt that Pittsburgh, waiting this long for Aaron Rodgers, not publicly knowing if he's going to join their team, they have to have some type of intel or insight that Aaron Rodgers will come.
They have to.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking, too, as well. But also, too, Carl, Abe, if that's the case, how long do you want to allow Aaron Rodgers to be away from the team? OTAs is right around the corner. Teams are doing that off-season workout regimen. Remember, this will be a new playbook.
Right.
A new playbook, a new personnel, group of personnel that he has to get acclimated to, and that's take time. So that's my personal opinion, and hopefully we hear some Aaron Rodgers news sooner than later because the wait has been annoying.
All right, let me ask you this, because you know Mike T as well as anybody. Has he said show up when you need to? That's not Mike T's way. That's not what Mike Tomlin does. Show up whenever you need to. I mean, I feel like he's already holding him hostage, and he's not officially even signed there yet.
Thank you. And you would think that would not be informed to Aaron Rodgers. Show up whenever you want to. Man, we're in May. You guys know how fast the season will get here.
It creeps
up on
you.
This is a new offense. This isn't the same situation like when Aaron Rodgers was a Green Bay Packer lifer, where he knew the playbook like the back of his hand, where it's like, okay, you don't want to get here whenever. You know it. You don't. And camaraderie is very, very important. Chemistry, rhythm is very, very important, especially when you're working in a team environment like the National Football League is. So I would hope not, but it seems like that might be the case because Aaron Rodgers has yet to say, I'm not playing or I'm playing. It's simple. Two options. I'm retiring. The other option, I'm playing. What's so difficult about that?
Brian, final question for me, and it's another quarterback. The 49ers got to come to a decision here on Brock Purdy. Is this a guy, after already giving Kittle a deal that makes him the highest paid tight end, is this a guy you're looking at and say that's a $50 million quarterback?
Hell no.
Well,
come on, Abe. I'm all asking right. him. Oh, all right, you're right, you're right, you're right, you're right.
I know the answer.
I'm sorry.
I know the answer.
Pete, go ahead. Hey, I'm sorry.
Hey, okay, so let's look at it like this, right? And I call, no question. I hear what you're saying, but if you're Brock Purdy, I'm going to say give me the same grace y'all gave Trevor Lawrence. Is Trevor Lawrence a $55 million quarterback per year? No. If I'm Brock Purdy, I'm going to say, give me the same grace y'all gave Tua Tagovailoa. Is he a $50-plus million quarterback per year? No. If I'm Brock Purdy, I'm going to say, give me the same grace y'all gave Justin Herbert. Is he deserving of seeing $50-plus million per year based on what he's done throughout his career,
career? No.
So if I'm Brock Purdy, the same grace those quarterbacks receive, I need to see that same grace because, number one, you can say whatever you want to say about my individual skill set. I've won games. In the Super Bowl we lost, I played well enough for us to win. It wasn't my fault we lost, so they never missed a beat. And because of Brock Purdy, we don't talk about John Lynch being a questionable decision maker in terms of personnel. We don't talk about Kyle Shanahan not being able to finish. Because remember, Brock Purdy was never supposed to be the guy. The guy was supposed to be Trey Lance, who they traded up for, and he was a dud. Then in comes Jimmy Garoppolo. That was injury concerns. They gave Jimmy Garoppolo a nice contract. Remember that? But all of that gets swept under the rug. Why? Because they've been winning with Brock Purdy. Javon Kinlaw, a former first-round pick, no longer there. Solomon Thomas. Look at the draft misses that John Lynch has drafted while being there in San Francisco. But all of that goes unheard of and is not talked about because of Brock Purdy. So, Carl, I agree with you. Individually speaking, no, he's not. But you can say that about 30% of the NFL quarterback room who's getting around that money, who's not deserving to see that. Is Dak Prescott deserving to see $60 million per year?
No.
That's the market. So if I'm Brock Purdy, those quarterbacks, they saw financial grace. They received financial grace in getting those deals. So you can't knock me because Brock Purdy has been a proven winner than all the quarterbacks that I mentioned. And there are some that I didn't mention that I can throw out there as well. But I'm just talking about those guys because they have seen contracts recently, and they're basically in that same neighborhood that I would say Brock Purdy should be in.
Abe, you see what you did? You got B all worked up. You see what you did?
He would have answered regularly.
You asked this question, and you see what you did?
He's going to answer regularly if you didn't jump in.
What's up, B?
Hey, Carl, Abe, what lie did I say?
You did.
That's all I want to know. If I said a lie, please tell me.
Man, we got to run. Have a great weekend. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thank you.
Bryant McFadden, we're coming back. Giants general manager Joe Shane says his new quarterback is going to benefit from sitting. We'll talk about it in our 4th and 1 segment coming up next. We're live at the Atlanta United Training Grounds. It's Dukes and Bell.